welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. I am your host, Ben Maxwell, and with me is Tracy Erickson.
Hello.
And Will Wilson.
Hello.
Tracy, you won't have seen this, but I'm just wondering, Will, have you seen the adverts for the Vauxhall Mareeva recently?
No.
Because they've relaunched the Mareeva. Tracy, if you don't know, is kind of it's like a people carrier, you know, a family car. I can't think of an American equivalent, but just a shapeless bubble to put your family in. The car you buy when you have a family, you no longer want to drive for pleasure. Yeah, and you just have to move kids around to various school appointments. But anyway, it's been the biggest innovation is being kind of pushed to the flex doors it uses, which are, you know, they open so that the back doors go open backwards, the front doors open front forwards, so you've got the space to get into. And the tagline is "Embrace life." That's what they're using in the adverts. Embrace life at the end of every advert. Now, does anyone, pop quiz, know the name of doors that open that are hinged on the rear? No?
No.
No, they're called suicide doors. Now, why didn't Vauxhall give it a little more thought?
That's great.
They got this name because all doors used to be hinged on the back, and they if they got caught in the wind, they'd fly open. People, women in their dresses, would fall out, and rather than faint, they'd die horribly on the road. So, obviously, men as well. So they started to be front hinged, and obviously the air then pushes them closed, and you're safe. And I think maybe it was a little bit about getting out on a busy road and opening it backwards. You can't really see what's going on. So yeah, Vauxhall Mareeva is embracing life with suicide doors. I just thought that was nice. But that's not iPhone news. This, however, is.
News!
So first up, we've got the highly important news. And you always know when news is really important because Rob Hearn will write the story because he wants to do it because he thinks it's going to be fun or enjoyable rather than doling it out to everyone else. That's how it works, really, isn't it?
Yep, pretty much.
Yeah. this one, sorry, bear in mind, of course, Rob does have an iPhone 4. iPhone owners have had twice as many sexual partners as Android owners, a survey says, or a research study. You know what we think about surveys from last time.
Yeah, but this sort of survey is different.
This is quite different, isn't it? I have an iPhone. So I'm pretty convinced of its truth. How about you, Tracy? What kind of phone do you have? You've got an iPhone, don't you?
I have multiple iPhones.
Multiple iPhones. My goodness me.
Player. Hey, I know your type.
And Will, what have you got?
Barda.
Yeah, it's not even included in the survey.
Yep. Looks like you won't be getting any bada boom.
Oh, no. That's awful.
It's awful, but in a great way.
Well, I also have an Android as well. Where do they rank?
Well, half as well as the iPhone.
Okay.
Well, if you're having to use a Droid, well...
I have multiple Droids.
Yeah, machines aren't really...
Well, they do different things.
Have you seen AI?
Whoa! Taking your Star Wars fetish a little too far.
I think we need to move on. This is especially interesting, the results of this survey, because in another piece of news, it doesn't seem to be helping Android users much, that they're not particularly sexually active, because they're now contracting viruses all over the shop, a Trojan virus to be specific, on their devices, which apparently is stealing bank details and sending out text messages at premium rates. Now, I don't have any access to an Android. Will, you do? Have you contracted any viruses recently?
Not recently, no. No, well, it's not an Android market app. It's something that they download outside it. So, and no one knows what it's called. So it's a little bit suspicious, to be fair. Especially as the people that found it are releasing an antivirus program for Android next year. So I'm a little bit sus about that. I'm not being an Android defender here, being as I do have quite a few Android phones. But
it won't help you.
Yeah. Well, you know, if one falls, I'll move to the next.
So talking of downloads, this is a good download, a nice download. Free App a Day, the official app, has now been downloaded more than 800,000 times. That, of course, doesn't mean it's necessarily been downloaded by 800,000 people, but that's a lot of downloads. I guess people like free stuff. Who'd have thought?
Yeah, it's a bit weird, that.
Yeah. Bizarre.
Yeah.
Tracy, do you like free things?
Yeah, why not?
Oh, really?
Really? What?
Will, do you?
No.
No,
I like paying stuff like the most expensive things I could buy, even though I could keep it free.
Me too. I like to be ripped off.
It's a good success for the company, I guess, though, because I mean they're pushing for a million.
Yeah. Pushing on for a million. It's a great endeavor. It's a really interesting business model as well, because it's doing brilliant things for developers. And it's going to, I mean, there's a lot of kind of talk and criticism on the amount of good apps that maybe get buried in the App Store, that despite the improvements to search functionality, that still can be hard to find things, and it can be hard for some games to rise to the top. Obviously, Apple are doing good things to change that around, but this is yet another avenue to kind of be, you know, have a little podium be shown to the public.
Also, and I've sorry
go on after you.
Also, it's an interesting thing. I don't remember this sort of, because there's quite a few of them now that do it, like OpenFaint does it as well, doesn't it? I don't remember any other sort of system having a similar sort of initiatives on it.
No.
I might be correct.
The PC had freeware, but you didn't get the whole game. You get
temporary
demo, essentially.
And, you know, people love this sort of thing. I mean, looking at the popular news for the iPhone section right now, I've got two stories in there that are about either something going free, in this case, Sid Meier's Civilization, or lots of sales. And people, you know, people love cheap games and stuff. And it's really good. As you said, it sort of highlights the games, even when they go back up to, like, the full price. A lot more people have it, and they'll tell their friends, you know, man, this game is great. So, you know, it's quite an interesting, it's a good economically pleasant way of promoting games.
But I hadn't seen the acronym. It hadn't occurred to me until I looked at the story and saw the logo, that it says FAD with a double A, obviously. But that's ironic, isn't it? Given its continued success.
I don't think
there you go.
They intended that.
It's another Ben Maxwell observation on the house.
Pour me another, Ben.
It's coming. Oh. So what else in the news? Just quickly, I spoke a little bit about Escaluda, say it correctly this time, last week that I've been playing. Cave are following that up with Dondonpachi, which is another one of their shooters. They've actually said as well that they want to bring a lot of shooters to the iPhone. They've been quite impressed with it. So hopefully we're going to see a whole torrent of them, though maybe not at £5.49. I don't think, as much as I like shooters, one splurge, £5.49, was fine. I don't think I need another one just yet. I mean, the differences between these kind of games are pretty subtle, really, unless you're obsessed
and
by it.
And we have R-Type coming, too. It's slightly different than those two, but we have that coming as well.
So that's the news. I think that means it's time to head into the rumor mine.
Rumor. Rumor.
So first up in the rumor mine, more Japanese pronunciation games. We have it's on shaky authority, let's put it that way, given that it's the rumor miner, that Nipponichi, who creates the strategy RPG, turn-based strategy RPG game Discair, are possibly bringing that to iPhone and iPod Touch. If this is true, it may finally be the game that stops me playing Drop 7 hourly, because I do play it far too much.
Hourly? Wow.
I spend more time with Drop 7 than I probably do with my fiance. I think she'd think that. 7 out of 10. All right, Android. The game is an amazing character-driven kind of battling game where you have various... If anyone's played Advanced Wars, imagine that, but then dial up the complexity. The depth and breadth of this game is a little bit dizzying. You can dip in and you can enjoy the early levels. And you can even go through the game without fully mastering the kind of intricacies of the mechanics. But if you do allow yourself to go into it, it becomes ridiculous. And there's a lifetime to be lost, several lifetimes to be lost in these games. All the battles are endlessly replayable. There's a huge amount of customization, all sorts of hundreds of characters that you can bring onto the battlefield and in combination do different things. It's wonderful. Now, the reason this rumor exists is that Nipponichi have already released an iPhone game. It's a text-only adventure, which apparently consists of spooky tales. It's in Japan, though. It's called Hayarigami. I haven't played it or even seen it. Has anyone seen it at all or any images of it?
It's like adventure. They're like books, like e-books.
Bloody text adventures.
Yeah, all of us are like, yeah, what about Disgaea again?
You know what? I haven't actually played it, Disgaea.
Really?
Oh,
really?
It's one of those series that I would definitely appeal to me because I'm a massive strat RPG fan. But mm-hmm. I've never
you really
been
like it.
I know, but every single time it comes out, it's on a system that I just got rid of.
Yeah.
So it comes out on the PlayStation, got rid of that. Comes out on the PSP, I don't have one anymore. It's like, if it came out on the iPhone, I'd be over the moon just purely because I'd get the. I'd probably have sold the iPod or something when it comes out. That's almost a guarantee. Yeah, it's one of the series I've always wanted to play, but just never had the opportunity.
One of the things that makes it was such a great game was that it's so cheeky. It's really funny. It's really bizarre. It's like Final Fantasy Tactics, but self-aware.
Yeah. Yeah, it's dark as well. Dark, funny, and... No, the self-aware thing is really good. It doesn't take itself very seriously. But that kind of makes it all the more shocking when you discover quite how much is lurking beneath the surface. So yeah, so Disgaea is on its way. Disgaea, that's another game that I don't know how you pronounce properly. But it is hopefully going to arrive. And if it does, that's going to be good news for everybody. So what's next in the rumor mine, Tracy?
Well, we're back to our favorite subject this summer of the new iPod Touch that is rumored to be announced in September, which is actually only next month. We're almost finished with summer, guys. There's been a lot of back and forth chatter about whether or not it's going to have a camera. And the rumor miner is telling us today that there will not be a camera in the fifth generation iPod Touch. Or fourth, or whatever it is.
Well, I mean, we went over this last week, didn't we? We're not sure quite.
It doesn't
how
need one.
Useful it would be. Yeah,
it's an MP3 player. I mean, that's its primary purpose. I mean, I don't see the point of an MP3 player having. Obviously, you could quite easily say I don't see the point of a phone having a camera, but the. I don't know. There's no reason why they would want to put one into an MP3 player. Like, the competition doesn't have one. So, and it would start infringing on an area that the iPhone does pretty well. So why do it?
Yeah, though I don't think that it would ever come down to... I don't think there would ever be any internal competition over the iPhone and iPod Touch over which had the better camera.
No, I didn't mean that. I just meant that people who would want to buy the iPhone because it plays their iTunes music and has a camera would then have a choice of actually going, oh, let's buy an iPod instead.
Yeah. Well, so we're not too bothered about that then. I think that's the general feeling, isn't it?
I'm sure we're in the minority, though. I mean, people who probably have iPod Touch, an iPod Touch now, probably would love that camera. But I think the consumers are discreet, right? I don't think you have a lot of people who have iPhones and iPod Touches, because it's a little bit redundant.
Mm. Yeah, there is too much crossover there, isn't there? It's one or the other. I got rid of my MP3 player as soon as I got the iPhone. I didn't have an iPod. I had a different one. But yeah, there's absolutely no need for it now. Happy to just have it all in one place. And it's convenient and good and useful. And really, the iPhone is just yet another step along the kind of inexorable journey to the tricorder from Star Trek. it's or equivalent in less bulky plastic. Next rumor.
Next rumor is kind of unusual. Everybody knows Warner Brothers. They make movies. And they've done some stuff on iPhone and iPod Touch. They've done the Harry Potter Spells app, which is kind of a game. It's more kind of an entertainment app. And they did a game on Ninja Assassin, which was really bad. And they've done a couple of other things. Oh, they did Watchmen MMO, which was really bad. And I hate saying that because I actually really like the guys that work over at Warner Brothers. They're really, really good people. Rumor Miner is saying that they're working on an adaptation of Inception. Have you guys seen that movie?
I have, very recently. It's an amazing movie. And that makes me worried if we're working with a relatively bad track record here.
My only concern is I would love to see a game on the movie. I think it could be done, certainly.
Absolutely.
I think, however, I would be concerned that it would be too focused on the action and would lose the intellectualism that makes the film so intriguing. What made Inception a great film wasn't the action. It was that the action was meaningful, right? Like, it's because you sit there and your mind is working to try to figure out what's going on in this really sort of high concept plot. And if you just had all this action going on the screen without knowing what, without any of the context, it really wouldn't have been good at all. So that's summer blockbuster, right?
Well, I mean that's so often the translation of a film to a game, it's perennially kind of stripped of its meaning, taken out of context. Whatever is the easiest thing to latch onto, like an action sequence or whatever, is the thing that's used, and it fails based on that. But obviously it's going to take so many more resources to accurately represent an incredible film.
Talking of latching on and being inappropriate, as I've only seen the trailer for the film, all I can imagine in my head is an iPhone game where you slide blocks to create a picture. Which would fulfill your intellectual part of your requirement.
Would it? Depends on the picture.
It's of a city, probably Paris. You have to slide the blocks into place based on Google Maps.
See, I think it would be really cool. If I were doing it, Warner Brothers, I hope you're listening. If I were doing the game, I wouldn't follow the events of the film. I would take, like, one of the characters and do like a side story and do it so that way, like, you could have it where the player is like the levels are constantly shifting. So, like, for example, let's say you're in Paris and you're walking in a street and you're doing a motor car chase, and like something out of French Connection or something, right? Like, you're doing the motor car chase, and then all of a sudden you pass this intersection and the whole scene morphs into something else. Now you're on the streets of Phoenix, Arizona, and you are dealing with like a drug cartel, and you're constantly shifting locations, and you're trying to like figure out what's going on. And it's a completely different story. And I think that would be kind of cool, because one of the great things about games is that you can deliver that sort of variety. Like, you can just instantly plop the player into these really crazy scenarios. And why not just like totally bite down on that, embrace that, and like, I mean, it really could work. But the problem is, it's going to require, like you said, a lot of resources, a lot of time, and some really good designers/writers to sort of put forth a vision. And my concern is that because it's an iPhone and iPod Touch game, it's like, that's just not going to be there.
Let's talk about the games we've been playing.
What we've been playing!
So, Tracy, please, after you. You can go first this week. What have you been...
Let's start with Osmos iPhone. Will, that's a game that you reviewed on iPad.
Indeed.
And just really briefly, I essentially echoed your review.
I read it. It was nice.
Yeah. It's a good game.
It is a good game.
I had the same frustrations that you did, though, particularly with the levels in which there is an attractor body at the center of the level, and you have to orbit around it while, it's very frustrating because it's just too random.
Yeah, exactly.
In terms of, and I felt a little bit bad about knocking the game for that, because it's essentially it's simulating those physics. So that randomness is sort of natural. But at the same time, as a game designer, it's not, you don't get a pass for saying, well, I'm delivering physics, that's just how it behaves, it's not my fault, like,
it's real life,
gotta be able... Yeah, I feel it's like, well, no, your job as a game designer is to create the illusion of reality, not to deliver reality. I mean, so it needs to be kind of tweaked in a way, because I would try those levels, those orbiting levels, at least a dozen times before it was like, oh, by chance I happened to assimilate enough matter to actually break away
from the death grip. It was the ones that flipped you around that really pissed me off, because the ones with the ecliptical orbits, because it was it was so hard to actually gauge like where you would go next. I mean, there was the guide, but it didn't really help very much, because you needed to grab the other the globs, and by the time you've used up your propulsion, you're smaller than them. So you have to just...
And then anything kills you.
Yeah, you just sort of have to hope that you get enough at the starting point on the level, and then you're fine. But it's just... I don't know. Those ones, it was a bit of a shame, because I liked all the other ones, really. All the other types of levels.
Yeah, it's on the whole, it's really interesting. I don't think it's innovative, though. Everybody's saying that it's innovative. It's not innovative. It's a modification of the core design of Flow. Which was originally introduced on PlayStation Network a couple of years ago. It's on PSP. I reviewed Flow for PSP.
It was actually a download flash title game as well. It's a flash game, just
right. Exactly. Yeah, even before it was on PlayStation Network. That's absolutely right, Ben. Forgot about that. So it's not innovative. I will say one last thing before I go on to the second title that I've been playing. The screenshots don't look very good, I have to admit, both on the iPad and the iPhone version. They look really boring. And kind of ugly in some shots. The game actually looks really nice when in motion and when you're playing it, because there's a lot of particle effects that you can't see in the screenshots, because in the screenshots it just looks like really ugly cells. So if you haven't given it a whirl, and you like the way the game sounds and trust the 8s that were given to the iPhone and iPad versions, then it's worth a download. Just be aware it looks a lot better than it actually appears in the screenshots. The second game that I'm playing, and I've also talked to Will about this, is an iPad game called Midnight Mysteries Salem Witch Trials, which is a kind of adventure/hidden object game from Mumbo Jumbo. And this appeared on the App Store a few days ago, and I'd caught it, and I thought, oh my God, this game looks really nice. Visually, it's really quite impressive. And started playing it, and it's just really quality. It's really well done. It's beautiful graphics, lots of puzzles and item manipulation. There are hidden object scenes. And it's all tied together in this kind of ghost story about the Salem witch trials, which is, I don't know, I just I think it's really well done. I know a lot of people don't get into it, so if you don't like adventure games or particularly hidden object games, I mean, you're not going to like it. But in terms of the quality of the design, just as someone, as a writer, I appreciate that. It's a game that someone, that the development team was really good. They knew what they were doing, and they've created something really nice.
You know, I remember a few podcasts ago, you were talking about another item kind of finding game. It's not a genre I've ever tried. I've always just thought, there's no way I'm going to like it. There's not going to be enough depth yet. But you're always so enthused. So I think I'm going to have to give this a shot and see what it's like. Because maybe I'm missing out on something. I just didn't realize it. You've converted me. Well, you've converted me into trying it.
I like this one in particular because it's a lot of the hidden object games will have normal looking scenes with weird objects supplanted, you know, inside. So it's like, it'll be a forest scene and it'll be like, find the rubber ducky. And you're like, that's completely unbelievable. Like, there's not going to be
it's just litter
on a pond.
You never walked through,
right?
Have you ever walked next to the abandoned, burned out motorcycle and the, oh, the Amazon? Well, it's not quite so local. I'm just talking about the woods.
And that's what makes this iPad, the Salem witch trials thing a lot. I like it because it's not as obtuse as that. It'll be like, find bolt cutters, and the bolt cutters will be in a toolbox, which the toolbox will be in a shed. So it's a lot more. It feels more like an adventure
game.
Yeah, in a way, yeah. It feels more organic.
It sounds good. Well, it sounds as good as an item-finding game can. I'm no longer a bigot, but I am still a skeptic. There you go. I've come up a level.
Well, I'm going to try it out a bit later, actually, to be fair.
Yeah.
I haven't played one of these hidden objects. I'm like you, Ben. It's not that I think that they're going to be crap. I just never played one. I don't know. It's like Dyskia, whatever, or however it's pronounced. One of those things that I always meant to pick up.
Scottish pronunciation.
Dyskia. Yeah, but I've never done it. So I'm downloading it now. It says loading on my iPad. So I'll check it out tonight.
Super. Well, so in the absence of that in your life up until this point, what else have you been playing?
Playing quite a few games, actually, Ben. I'll go through, because I've been looking at a couple of games around the iPad library for a feature that should be out tomorrow, which would be today when the podcast comes out. But among the ones that won't be in it are such titles as Hudson's Knights RTS is what it's installed as. I can't remember the exact title of it. But it's a nice-looking real-time strategy game which lacks any sort of strategy. High Society, which is a card game, and it's not very good. Well, it's okay. It's a card game, but it has very basic graphics, and you can't play more than one player, which I think is kind of pointless, considering that the iPad is a massive screen. I was just hit just now with the most pointless update for an app I've seen yet, which was Highborn HD, which told me that the update updates the screenshots.
What a waste of your bandwidth.
Wicked. Thanks, guys. Well, out of the I'll pick on two games. I'll go through one really quickly, but one I've been playing this week, Small World, which is adapted from the Belgian board game of the same name. It's very
not
good.
Disney ride, then?
No. I didn't even know there was a Disney ride.
It's a small world after all.
Not that one. It's quite an interesting two-player only board game. It's sort of a bit like Risk meets. I hope you guys have played this board game, because if you haven't, you're very, very bad. But it's a bit like Risk meets Puerto Rico.
Never played it.
Yeah, I knew it.
Never,
but I have had lots of sexual partners, so you know,
I played a lot of European board games. Who's the coolest? The actually that backfired. Yeah, it's a cross between those two games. So it's quite interesting. It's a two-player playlist primarily. It's lacking quite a lot of options, but the actual presentation is exactly how you should do a board game on the iPad. And I recommend anyone who likes either Puerto Rico or Risk to have a look at it. Check it out. It's good. The other game I've been playing, which is the one I've been reviewing, which took ages because it's a very long game and it's quite hard to condense everything I want to say about it to fit into the review. But of course, add a smaller word count means it's easier to read for you, and it means I can distill the main essence of the game. But it's a massive strategy RPG called War on... Let me pronounce the name right. War on
Puerto Rico.
Eustraf, I think. Or Eustraf, yeah.
War on Puerto Rico? That would last like a day.
Yeah, that would be good. That's not me declaring war, if you're listening, Puerto Rico. I take it back.
Well, anyway, War on Eustraf, I'm sure that's not the right pronunciation, but that's how I say it in my head. It's a strategy RPG. It's got stylings a little bit like a cross between Fire Emblem and lots of gears, as they call them, which are basically big robots, as you would expect. And it's really quite dull for the first 10 to 15 hours, which, to me... To be fair, I think the developers, when the review comes out, I think they should be happy that I stuck through and went right through to the end of the game, because it was really dull for a lot of it at the start of the game. And this puts the slow start of Final Fantasy XIII into perspective. You basically just attack things for the start. No consideration to tactics. It's basically a tap the screen game. After about 15 stages, the game finally remembers it's meant to be about strategy. So it starts introducing monsters which you can't kill by just walking up to them and bashing them on the head. And it gets really good. And also the characters are so annoying at the start of the game. It's like someone, even worse as well, they ripped a character from Neon Genesis Evangelion straight off. Like, basically, she could be the character. And it annoyed me that. So that wasn't a good start. But every character at the start of the game is cracking jokes, like every line. So it's like, ha 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 ha, crack joke, crack joke. Crack. And the plot doesn't exist, because every time in between battles, they're just joking. And they're just poor jokes all the time. It's like constant stream, and it just gets so annoying. So you, for the first 10 hours, you just hate everyone. I don't know. Some people will like this. Some people will think this is great, quirky humor. The sort of start, because I mean, you know, I've... The problem is, not sound a bit like a grumpy old curmudgeon or whatever. But, you know, I've watched loads of comedy Japanese animes and stuff, and they've been great. And I mean, I do like this sort of humor, but you can't just do it every single line, because it gets tiresome and it just loses it. But eventually the game starts, and it actually is quite a good tactics game with an interesting system based on the pilot's personalities and their will to be able to move their gears. And once that hits in, it doesn't do a very good job explaining this, but once it actually starts up and starts finally moving, then it's really good and it's quite enjoyable. But only the strategy RPG fans out of there, of you who are willing to wait for... I mean, because normally the genre starts off interesting. That's my main issue with this. It's like, normally, like anything, tactics, Tactics Ogre, Final Fantasy Tactics... All of them start off with a battle system that starts off interesting and then gets more interesting. It doesn't start off with a 10-hour intro. That's an RPG. And this doesn't get that right. And unfortunately, that means it's not going to be... I mean, the actual battle system itself is interesting, but they don't get that core concept of what the genre is about correct. So it never reaches those sort of heights. But if you're dedicated and if you're really looking for a tactics RPG for your iPad, then yeah, I'd say go for it. It's pretty good.
Although... That said, you're not going to have to wait that much longer to get a really good
That's another
tactics
problem.
RPG. So it's kind of, would you say then with knowledge that Final Fantasy Tactics is going to be available in
time? The review is very much aimed at the fact that I know Final Fantasy Tactics is coming. Because, I mean, technically our review criteria says to not compare across systems, which is fair enough. But I'm comparing this to a game which I know is going to come out, and I know it's good. Right. And it's like one of the pinnacles.
Yeah, that's the question I'm going to ask you. So knowing that, would you recommend the game to someone?
Well, you see, if you're really desperate for a tactics RPG that's good, I'd say yes. If you were willing to hold out Final Fantasy Tactics Advance, I'd say no. But it's not a bad game, and you will get some enjoyment out of it. That's the problem. I mean, it's nowhere near as good as Final Fantasy Tactics. Unless they do a really bad job on converting it, there's no way this is going to be better than that. It's not a bad game, though. I mean, it just doesn't quite get everything of what makes the genre good. It's a game that comes across as written by massive fans of the genre and not quite people who can step back and say, okay, we need to do this and this and this to let people know what to do. It's too much. They put all of their tactical layers on the game straight away, but they never tell you about it. So you have to find it out. And you don't need to find it out until about 15 hours into it because it's too quick. It's too simple.
Yeah.
Well, as Joey from Friends might say.
I'll edit down that reply. I went on for ages.
As Joey from Friends might say, I heard the words, but I was thinking about monster trucks. And that is exactly what I've been playing this week. A game called Monster Trucks Nitro. Which is free on Free App a Day, I think this is quite good. This is a sorbet to your heavy action tactics. You just drive big monster trucks over hills. I don't know if anyone's played Trials or any of the numerous physics bike games, but it's like that with the monster truck side on. It's all in 3D. It's quite nice. There's some lighting effects, some pretty nice textures, different trucks to choose that seem to have different performance ratings, and it starts from fairly basic tracks to big, you know, vertiginous jumps, leaps, ramps, and things to go over. And you've got accelerator on the right of the screen, brake on the left, and there's cruise control if you just want to let it go along, and just you know, not have to control the speed. And then you can make it lean by tilting the phone backwards and forwards, which is all brilliant. It's throwaway. I don't know if I would personally have paid for it, but it's something I've really enjoyed playing, knowing that I haven't paid for it. The only problem with it is because you're tilting, you know, in something like Trials HD on Xbox or Trials on PC, you can push, you know, keep the stick pushed one way and you do a full loop. If you want to do a loop here and came, you know, maybe stunt off the top of a tall jump, you have to twist the whole phone all the way around in your hands, which is a massive, massive inconvenience. It isn't very comfortable to do. There's one track that is just a loop and you have to do five loops. So you have to keep twisting the phone around in your hand whilst grabbing the accelerator again. I mean, you could put it on cruise control, but you seem to move a bit faster if you're holding the accelerator. There are boost things that get you around, but, you know, tilting the phone all the way around, not a good decision in my opinion. But the rest of it, great. It's still free now, so, you know, what's stopping you? Go and get it. And that's it, short and sweet. There's not much to the game. Monster Trucks, that's it. I like it. You will too. So that's what we've been playing. We have had a question from a listener, just one. Please do feel free to deluge us next week with as many questions as you like. I think it would be best if you put it under the story for the podcast that you've just found this from. And if you're on iTunes, then make the effort, come to Pocket Gamer, put it under the story. You'll find it. It's the one with podcast in the title. The question is from Terence in Basingstoke. And he says, are you ready, guys? With Android massing, Sony Ericsson rumored to be working on an Android 3 PlayStation phone and AntennaGate. Is this the beginning of the end for Apple? Ooh, controversial. Will, what do you think? By massing, I don't think he means, like, you know, a tea bag brewing. I think he means getting better.
Oh, okay. No.
Do you want to give us some details?
Well, purely from a spec point of view, the Desire's CPU won't be able to handle PSP games. But if the rumors are correct but not specifically correct, then yeah, there is a danger, I'd say.
Say that again about the which handset couldn't handle PSP games.
I don't think the Desire could. It uses the Snapdragon processor. I don't think.
Oh, okay. Good. Okay.
It's, I mean, like, we've got a lot of people on our Android comments getting annoyed of us, like, annoyed with John, like, using Gameloft's provided handsets for reviewing Android games. But they provided a Desire, so it's not much he can do about that. But, yeah, the 3D performance in Desire is awful. So if the rumors are true and it uses the Desire CPU, then, pff, yeah, whatever.
You got it better, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the question is a good one, but I think I have to agree with Will here on this. I don't think it's the beginning of the end for Apple. I think if there's anything that's going to eat into Apple's domination of mobile gaming right now, it would be Microsoft. And this is, people have been sort of forgetting that Windows Mobile 7 is still slated to launch at the end of the year with a line of really spectacular handsets. And I think that's been intentional on Microsoft's part. They're kind of hunkering down, finishing up the platform for a launch that they hope is going to be significant. I don't think Android is going to be the sort of high-end powerhouse that Google would like it to be. I think it's going to, and I've mentioned this before, I think it's the new Java. It's going to be ubiquitous, but it's not going to be sort of the platform that is pushing that cutting edge. Yeah. That's largely dominated by Apple. And Apple took that space over from Nokia. So really, it's going to have to be another player entirely, and I think the company that has the greatest chance of doing that would be Microsoft. A lot of the features that I've seen out of these new Windows 7 phones are absolutely spectacular. I mean, you're talking about Xbox Live integration, you're talking about full HD, you know, video. I mean, really some killer stuff. The question I think that everybody is kind of wanting to know the answer to is whether or not Microsoft is actually going to be able to execute on that promise. And that's where it gets kind of tricky, because Microsoft as a company is always really good at generating really good ideas, very ambitious visions, but they have difficulty executing and making those visions a reality. You know, the concept of Live Anywhere, for example, was something that was introduced by Bill Gates, gosh, like 2005. It's now 2010, and we still don't have Live Anywhere. So that's really going to be the test. If Microsoft can execute on Windows Mobile 7, and if the handsets are as good as the prototypes suggest, and we're able to play Xbox Live Arcade games on our phones, that's going to be a draw. I mean, that's really going to, I think, catch a lot of people's attention. So
I mean, I don't have to play Monster Trucks anymore, and I can play Trials HD.
Exactly.
That would be a good shift. And I wouldn't have to tilt
exactly.
my phone. You know, Microsoft have also, they've just established a mobile development wing, haven't they, as well? So that, you know, they're clearly hugely serious about this. And yeah, I think you're right. I think they are probably, maybe they're a bit like, it's kind of silent running, isn't it? No one's really looking to them as being the danger, which is a good thing for Microsoft. It means that they can take their time. I don't think that, AntennaGate was, it's a bit overhyped really, isn't it? It got everywhere because of the socially networked world we live in. But ultimately, most iPhone 4 users are pretty happy with the product, and I don't think it will have put anyone off.
I think the problem with Android, and this is, I know my perspective is certainly unique because I'm here in the States, and so there's a completely different attitude toward the platform. It's very confusing. It's extremely fragmented. You have to, you know, if you're an iPhone gamer, you have to deal with four handsets that are all running the same OS, right? With Android, you're talking about dozens and dozens of phones with different processors, with different screen, you know, sizes. With, I mean, it's very confusing.
It's still the mobile market before the iPhone came to be. You know, it's the legacy of that.
It impacts consumer perception. It impacts developers, you know, in terms of what they want to build and how. It's very interesting because Google is extremely sensitive about this issue. I mean, I remember reading, I wish I could remember where I had read it, but one of their Android spokespeople was saying, how dare, you know, you knock us for fragmentation. Android's not fragmented. It's like, yes, it is. Like, how can you combat that? Like, that's a fact. I mean, it's not an interpretation. It's not open to debate. Android is fragmented. It's a strength and weakness. So admit it and latch onto those strengths and go with it. You know, and I think that's going to continue to be a problem for them. And if they're smart, they will, you know, like any company, they will transform that weakness into a strength. But until they figure out a way of doing that, it's going to continue to harm them. And it's only going to embolden Apple with iPhone 4. I mean, I think that's what's kind of the interesting story here is iPhone 4 has really fragmented the iPhone gaming base, and yet it's working. iPhone 4 sales have been fantastic. Mm-hmm. You know, they've sold over 4 million of those handsets. That's really good. And it's continuing to sell very well in spite of the antenna problems. So to go back to what you're saying, people don't seem to be bothered by it at all. So in fact, rather than dying, you know, rather than being a slowdown for iPhone as a result of these competing platforms gaining, you know, sort of adopt, you know, users, iPhone continues to grow.
I would say that it's slightly unfair to put Android and I know they're both mobile platforms, but there's such a lack of central force behind Android that it's very difficult to say, like, for, in my mind, because I mean I've got devices here which are 1.5, 1.6, 2.1, and they're all different, like the apps they can run and everything. In my mind, because this always bugs me about Android is that people on the forums who defend Android talk about it as if it's iOS. You know, they'll say Android phone. What kind of Android is it though? Because it's not. What kind of make is it? What kind of phone is it? I mean, what kind of hardware? You've got a Snapdragon. Well, that's not as good as a Hummingbird. What have you got there? Yeah. It's not a good capacitive touchscreen as this phone's touchscreen. And yet people always talk about it on the line as if it's Android, the flag. It's not though. It's literally, it makes no sense to talk about Android as a collective because they're just not, ironically, they're not uniform. Ironically, in the sense that Androids, you know, robots. So I always think it's incorrect to try and say Android versus iOS, because really it's just a mobile platform. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't have that same unity between handsets. As you were saying, it's all fragmented, so it's not really going to pose that much of a threat in that terms.
Well, I think that is a comprehensive answer. If you don't want to, I meant all of us, not just you, Will. Don't be taking that as a compliment. If you don't want to hear us drone on the same subject for ages, again next week, send more than one question, and then we'll shorten them and split it up. But that's it. You've made it to the end. Congratulations for sticking with us. It's a bit like, I suppose, the RPG, strategy RPG that Will was talking about. You've got the, you know, 15 hours of boredom. Here you've got, say, 50 minutes, and then this last minute's great.
Well, no, so actually, the last 15 hours are good.
Not here. No, we're not going to be speaking for 15 hours, are we? No. Well, you can. I'm going to go and get a cup of tea because it's late. And I'm ready for, you know, some TV. Maybe I'll go and watch Joey. Get some more quotes for next week. Farewell.
Farewell from me.
Farewell.